Get Talent Podcast.
How you feeling today, Danny?
Feeling good today. Feeling really good.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Get Talent Podcast. I am your host, Ben Cross, and I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Danny Herskowitz. Danny, how you doing today?
Doing really well, Ben. How are you?
Dude, man. I mean, the best. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's an amazing day. I feel very blessed. Things are going incredibly well. Candidates are happy. Clients are happy. I just couldn't ask for anything more. My team is amazing. You guys are incredible. So just in a really good space right now, and feeling very fortunate to be here.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I mean, it's I've been feeling the same way. I've been feeling pretty grateful for the opportunities we have at this company and you know what we're doing here. So I think we're pretty lucky.
Yeah, we're extremely fortunate. And some of the cool things, there's been some really cool things happening for us as our company's kind of grown and developed. And it's really kind of brought us to this topic today. Danny, tell people, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about a topic that I know you're really passionate about, because we've talked about this, but it's about confidential searches.
Confidential searches. Top secret spy stuff. I mean,
yeah.
I've been watching a lot of Netflix, The Recruit, you know, Jack Ryan's on. I mean, what are we talking about? We say confidential searches. I mean, you're going to hook people up to polygraphs. What's happening right now?
Yeah, it's not that serious, but it's basically, it's a search that's conducted, I guess you can say, in secrecy.
In secrecy with
a few individuals within the organization. And they're the only ones that really know about this. So this position isn't posted or advertised to potential candidates in the market. It's kept within this small group of people, usually at the executive level and HR as well.
Okay, really interesting. Why would a company conduct a confidential search, right? I mean, we think of job postings, like everybody's got Indeed, everybody sees on LinkedIn. It feels like there's millions of job postings out there for people to kind of go after. Why does this market of confidential secret searches, you know, why does this exist?
Yeah, so just first of all on that, so a study that I saw, according to CNBC, 70% of jobs are actually never published publicly.
What? So, 70% are never published publicly. More than half, like a significant two-thirds, more than two-thirds of jobs, you're telling me, are never published publicly. How do people think they're going to hire people if they don't let people know they're hiring?
Right? And that's the thing. It just shows you how many searches are done in this, I guess you can say, the secret way that
people, most searches.
Most searches, right? Majority. So when we see all these job postings on LinkedIn and Indeed, these are just like a very small portion of what's going on in the market.
Why are they doing that? Why are companies doing it that way?
So I've found there's three reasons that we have found, I would say, here at Glomo. As to why companies do that is obviously a lot more, but these are the top three. The first one is they're used to replace employees. So someone who is either resigning from a position or is being replaced, you know, due to either poor performance or issues that they're having with the company.
And why would that be done confidentially?
Well, the person in these cases that we're talking about is actually in the role itself. So especially when it comes to a replacement for performance, where the individual doesn't know that it's coming, you know, it's important.
So somebody's about to get fired and they're like, hey, we don't want to let this person know they're about to get fired, but they're about to get fired and we can't really have a disruption. Like, we can't have this seat not filled. So we need to be like, boom, you're gone. And hey, nice to meet you. You know, we need to have no lapse. Is that kind of what you're describing?
Yeah, they're just kind of getting a head start on it, right? So they know it's about to happen. And then they're they're plugging in that person right when, you know, right when that person transitions out of the role. So that's the first one that we see. Second one is they're creating an actual, an additional role to the business. And they're exploring potentially a new market or a new product line or a new business model. And the reason that they would do this confidentially is to avoid their competitors finding out about it. This could increase competition for them.
Yeah, I that makes a lot of sense. So these are more kind of strategic in nature. They are more kind of having to do with the proprietary plans of the business.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's also situations where they want to post for a role, the company wants to post for a role, and they know that a lot of people on the team are going to want to apply for that role.
Yeah.
But they already don't feel like these people are qualified. Like they've already taken, you know, management's taking a look around and like, hey, you know, we don't have the talent here to fill this position. Otherwise, we'd have just promoted somebody from within, which, by the way, is also an unposted role sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to create a whole, you know, a whole bunch of people like jockeying for position and trying to interview. And then when they don't get the job, they get upset, you know, and just kind of create a lot of tumult in the business.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we've seen that a lot for sure. And I've seen that throughout my career. Definitely.
Yeah. As soon as that juicy manager role comes open and everybody's been, you know, waiting for years for that role, they're
right.
Like, all right, sweet, I'm going to get it. No, I'm going to get it. No, I'm going to. And then they bring in somebody from the outside. They're like, hey, here's Bob. Right. They're like, what? Bob?
Yeah.
Come on, Bob. I've been here 5 years. What's Bob been doing? Bob don't right. even know this business.
Exactly. Exactly. And then they call us and yes. find a new job. So
they call us to find a new job.
That's what happens. But yeah. And I would say the third one is when companies are experiencing internal changes or maybe a reorganization, which could be a merger, IPOs or restructuring. So they'll conduct this search confidentially, usually because they don't want to cause fear amongst the employees, because this type of news can scare people and get them to start looking for other jobs.
So would you say that these roles are more junior or more senior in nature typically?
Senior. I would say the majority of the time from what we've seen, what I've read, these are executive level positions.
Executive C-suite. Level positions. So this is interesting. So not only are these jobs not published, but they're also really sweet jobs.
Yeah.
It's exactly. not like, hey, you know what, this janitor position, we're not going to put this on Indeed because we don't want to create a whole bunch of ruckus in the organization.
Right.
It's like, no, the, you know, senior vice president of strategy or the, you know, whatever. I mean, those are the kind of roles that are, you know, a new president role or a new EVP role or even a, you know, director of a new division. Or
yeah.
whatever. I mean, those are the types of jobs. I mean, these are really cool jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. These are candidates. These are jobs where you really literally like transform the company. So it's really important that they have the right people in these roles. And they're and yeah, those are the I would say the main reasons that they would do that.
So how, if they're not posting these jobs, how are they filling? I mean, 70% of jobs are not being posted, how are they filling them?
I think there's two ways, right? So the first way is, you know, if you've been in the industry for a while and you're a president or hiring manager, you go out to your network and you can start asking people that you know who's the best person for the job, right? Which right. which works.
It works. However, it works. I gotta think that there's a lot of bias. In that
lots,
process,
lots
right?
of bias.
It's all,
exactly.
Remember what's that saying, right? It's who you know, right?
Exactly.
Somebody once told me it's not who you know, it's who knows you. Just kind of a riff right. on that.
But right.
It's all about the power of networks and social capital and things like that.
Yeah.
That's a scary thing when you think about what if you're from a minority group? What if you're from a disadvantaged group? What if
yeah.
you're a disabled person, right?
Yeah.
Right. If you're not in the in crowd, I mean, we talk about the boys club, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And women experiencing glass ceilings and things like that. I mean, I have to think that a lot of that is due to the nature of going out to your networks, right? And we know birds of a feather flock together. So if you're only going out to your networks, you're probably sourcing from people who are a lot like you.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
It has to perpetuate so much implicit and explicit bias in that process.
Yeah, to me, it seems like you're not necessarily qualifying the candidate in a fair way. Yep. And that's where I would say a recruiter comes in, what we do.
Yes. And I mean, and we're going to get to the recruiter thing too, because obviously, I mean, we're huge proponents of recruitment. But when you're not qualifying the candidate in a fair way, not only do you have bias, not only do you have a restricted candidate pool, but it's been shown that executives and who hires for strategic roles, executives do. Yeah. Executives use far fewer assessment points than non-executive hiring managers.
That's so funny that you say that, Ben, because I remember, I was just thinking about this. A couple years ago at my last company, I asked a CEO how he hires, what's his process? And he's like, I only do one interview, and that's it, and it's an art. I can know right away within the first 5 minutes if they're a good fit. And it's to your point, right?
Yeah.
You know?
And he probably makes that decision and actually less than five. He probably makes the decision in like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
There's studies that say in the first few seconds of meeting someone, we make a decision about do we like and trust this person.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And we start from that anchor point. So if a CEO is making a decision in the first 10 minutes or whatever, if they like somebody, what are they basing that on?
Usually
gender, race, height, attractiveness. Mm-hmm. I mean, what can you know about something in the first few minutes of meeting someone?
Right.
You can't know much.
Surface,
And is it substantive? Yeah. Is it the kind of stuff you want to hire for? You're not giving them, you know, assessment tests and exams. You're not, you know, running them by other people in the organization and saying, Hey, what do you think? You're not even starting with a diverse candidate pool. You're only starting with like the people in your network or your network's network, right? You know, as we might say, second degree connections on LinkedIn or something. So tons of issues with this process that I think we just have, we can't undersell how important it is to not just go to your network.
Yeah. And hire people like ourselves, right? Which is very easy to do.
Super easy to do. We don't even know we're doing it. We're just like, oh, I like this person. I can see myself, you know, how do we vote for president? I could have a beer with that guy.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not way to hire people.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, what if they don't drink?
Nice suit. Yeah.
What if they, you know, what if they're not a guy at all? You know,
right.
There's
right.
so many problems with that statement. Right.
Right. Right. I heard we vote for them because if they're tall enough, is that, have you heard that?
Yeah. Do you look at CEOs? They look at the average height of CEOs. Like most CEOs are over 6 foot and like 6'2".
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Why? I don't know.
They have gravitas. Yeah.
They have executive leadership.
Right.
Like what? Shut up. It doesn't make any sense. So anyway, all right. So so basically, you know, the takeaway here is we're all idiots and we all tend to go to our networks and we tend to over-index and overvalue the people that we know. And we tend to undervalue the people that we don't know and undervalue the impact that diversity can have on our organization. So why should a company, to your point, why should a company use a recruiting agency to conduct a confidential search?
Yeah, I was, you know, I didn't put this down, but I like what you're saying, right? So I think the first thing is we're able to provide, hopefully, an unbiased opinion based on our screening, to give them some perspective on the person so they can make the best decision and a fair decision. So I think that's a great point, what you're saying. The other points that I had was the recruiter can really sell the role in a confidential way. So if the president is, let's say, a really good person to sell that role, but they can't go out there and start revealing the name of their company and who they are.
As soon as the president reaches out, you know who the company is.
Right. It's no longer confidential. So it's out there. And we can, as recruiters, get the brief of the role, understand. We have that understanding of the company and we can position it and sell it in a way where we're giving some information, not all of it, but doing it in a personal way where we're really more forming a connection with the candidate and really getting them to understand that, which really can't do without someone else doing it for you if you're the person hiring.
Well, yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. And if a president, you know, if a company reaches out to someone and says, hey, Jim recommended you for this new strategic role we have. You know, our company's growing. We're a great place to work, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, that's cool that the president reached out. But are you is that candidate trusting the president's objective assessment of the company's positioning?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
No. The president has a vested interest here. I mean, the president is not objective. They're highly subjective. And are you trusting that as much as, say, a recruiter who, when we come in and we start talking about these executive searches, well, hey, listen, we work with many companies in this space. This particular company is uniquely positioned for these reasons compared to their competition. And I think we can come at it from a much more objective and empirical standpoint. And I think that we've seen that be very persuasive.
Yes. Right?
When we talk to these executive strategic candidates, you know, they really appreciate, I think, our perspective from our experience in the market.
I totally agree with that. And I think sometimes when a hiring manager or a CEO is in a rush to hire, sometimes they don't think things through. And I think by them going through the process and engaging us in a retained search to find a candidate gets them to step back and really think about what they need, which is important. And that brings me to my next point is time and speed, right? So, if you need to hire someone, if someone's, you just found out that a key member of your team is resigning, or something just happened with an employee that you're not happy about and you need to fire them, you need to find somebody pretty quickly as not to cause a gap in leadership.
Yeah.
So what you need to do is speak to an expert that can help you do this and expedite that process, because doing it yourself is going to be really difficult.
You're so right. Like, listen, I got to tell you, I mean, full disclosure here. I run a recruitment firm. We just hired two recruiters. We did not recruit those people ourselves.
Right.
We used a recruiter to recruit them.
Right.
And it's because it's like giving yourself a tattoo. You know, could you do it? Yeah. It's not a good idea. I don't care how good of a tattoo artist you are. Don't do it. Right. So it's like by giving it to, I was in the moving business. Hiring movers is way faster than me moving myself. If you give it to a professional, they're going to handle that search. And I mean, this guy, it was over the Christmas holiday, and this guy gave me four great resumes. Two went through interviews. Both of those were amazing. We ended up going from talking about doing the job, you know, talking about the job resume, you know, job description, all that stuff, to placement in 3-4 weeks.
Yeah.
And if I would have done it myself internally, we would have had, it would have taken us 3 months. No offense to the team. It just would have, because we're working on other stuff.
Yeah. You know, that was such a great perspective as a recruiter to go through that experience and see that happen. Because then you see how important our role is as a company's growing. You know, you don't think about that. And the thing is with recruiters, people like us, we have a large pool of candidates that we have access to that we might have had relationships for years. So we know these candidates really well. And we also use tools to go out and actively headhunt the best talent that's actually working right now.
Exactly.
So between those two, I mean, you're really set up to have a successful hire in the fastest way possible.
Yeah, that's one of the things I think that people – hiring managers, I would say, and even recruiters sometimes underestimate about this business is the power of specialism and the power of staying within a specialism. Specialism is like a niche, the power of staying within a niche, right? So, you know, for us, it's global mobility, it's relocation, it's business immigration, expatriate tax, moving, corporate housing. Staying squarely in there means that we're always playing to our strength, right? Pulling us out and saying, hey, I've got this great director of a clinic in Minnesota. Can you hire for it? No, I'm starting from absolute scratch. I know nothing about the industry. I know nothing about the job. I know nothing about the market. So, like for us, I mean, if a recruiting company won't even recruit their own people and would trust a recruiter who recruits recruiters in Dallas, like you should give it over to a recruiter that, you know, as a hiring manager, you should give it to a recruiter that, that is working directly in your specialism and can add that kind of that specialization, frankly, you know, and do it so fast. So, yeah, Dan, this is a great point, and I think that's probably one of the most underestimated points.
Yeah, I absolutely. And then the third point is we're able to manage the interview process in a way that that a president or hiring manager might not be able to, or might even have the time to. It's nothing against them and their you know, many times it's just innocent, right? You interview somebody, you're a CEO or you know, executive, you got so much going on. And then, you know, you just, you know, they reach out to you. They might send you a thank you email. You get busy with something else, you know, a deadline, and you almost, you forget about it. And a couple of days goes by. And then what happens is, unfortunately, the candidate starts to lose interest, right? So we say time kills all deals. So yeah. The recruiter can come in and help the CEO or hiring manager with that process. And then keeping in touch with the candidate, you know, selling them, you know, really being an advocate for you. Sorry, the CEO is went on vacation this week, but he's going to be back the week after. He's really interested in you. Like, those are the things that we can do for the candidate to keep them engaged, because there was a study done by Indeed that it took 24 days on average for a hiring manager to get back to a candidate after the interview. And to me, yeah, and that's pretty crazy, but it makes a lot of sense. And even for us doing hiring internally.
Why does that make sense to you? Why does that make, that's a crazy number. Why does that make sense to you?
You know, I can see, you know, you interview somebody, but things change in your business every single day, right? Yeah. So you get a new piece of news or information and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Let's kind of like see where this is going. Wait, before we like do that, let's see if we got this. Ooh, we're waiting for a new client. That actually hasn't come in yet. Let's kind of see where that goes. So I think that's what happens a lot. You know?
Yeah. Well, because you're exactly right. And it's not job one for that hiring manager. Job one is doing their job. Being a hiring manager is actually not their job title. Right. They serve as one as needed, but it is not what they put on their pants every morning to go do. You know, that's what you do. Right. That's what recruiters do every day. It's job one for you, where it's job like 21 for them.
Right. Right. 9 to 5. We're talking to candidates. That's it.
That's it. And they're going to fit that in between. So they're going to fit in that getting back to that candidate in between all the other fires they have to put out and only on days where their priorities haven't changed.
Right. Exactly. Right?
And so it's like, they're just not focused on it. And so to your point, I love when you say time kills all deals. I mean, people have told us that, and it's true in recruiting. It's true in any deal. If you let things go and you don't get back to people, things are never hotter. You know, a candidate is never more engaged than right after that first interview. Just like an employee is never more engaged than day one of a job, right? And you have to capture that momentum and strike while the iron's hot. Great point.
Yeah, that's like so overlooked, and it's almost like, you know, you get angry, some candidates get angry and they'll read that stuff, but you think about it from the perspective of the hiring manager, you know, us doing this now, you can see how this could happen. So it's usually unintentional. But I wanted to ask you, Ben, I mean, you know, we've been working together for a while now, and I've seen you get involved with some of these confidential searches. And not only that, I think a lot of CEOs trust you to talk through this information with them, to ask your opinion on things. I think they really look to you as someone who can really advise them on these matters. What's been your experience working in a confidential way with these companies?
It's probably one of my favorite parts of my job from a client-facing standpoint. I love when the president of a company or the CEO of a company or the EVP comes to me and says, hey, can I bend your ear about something? And let's just have an art of the possible conversation. You know, here's what strategically we're trying to do. to grow our business, or here's what's happening internally, and we're thinking we need someone in this role. And a lot of times it just starts as an unction. It starts as just a feeling. And through that process, we start to really hammer out what that person does. And a lot of times we're talking about the strategy of their company too, right? And we're like understanding what their strategic objectives are, what they're even trying to accomplish, and then work backwards into what the roles and responsibilities that person's going to be. And then because I'm dealing with CEOs, I also have to be honest with them and say, listen, you need to get a job description. You know, I know we're all up here in high level land, right? And very strategic, 30,000 feet. But we're going to talk again on Thursday, and I need a job description. I need a job title. I need a salary range you could live with. And I need to know who that person reports to. Okay, so I need you to get very tactical at the end of this and produce that for me. And I know HR is not a prize to the situation, so it means you're going to have to do it yourself. Sorry. But once you have that done, we're going to go forward to the market and we're going to find the most amazing people. So it's really an honor when people trust me to have those conversations and that they think enough of me and my experience as a strategic leader myself to kind of engage with them and be a thought partner. So it's really fun. I love to imagine how these things work. And I really love to put people with companies to unlock transformative value. Mm. Right? When you could take an A player who's kind of over here and she's been there for 7 years doing their thing, but kind of stalling a little bit just due to where the organization is or whatever. And you know that they have a lot of, locked up, pent up potential. And you just know they're kind of like chilling over there. Not unhappy, but they're just not like, chilling,
Yeah.
And then you see this company who's like primed for growth. If they just had that one, right? They're at like 211 degrees Fahrenheit. And they just need that one A player to make it pop, make it boil. And you know that person's over there. Oh man, that's just like that feeling just gives me the chills. Like I'm like, ooh, let's get this thing popping. So, I'm just like, and then that's what I'm like, I can confidently say, I know we can crush the search for you. And then the feedback that we get, I was talking to an executive vice president 2 days ago, and they hired a vice president. And they told me that they could see this person being a C-level person in 2 years at their company.
And amazing.
Amazing. We just got off the phone right before this call with a vice president who told me that one of the supervisor level people they said, we don't often have people in this part of the organization that have a true career path up. But this person you placed with us a month ago totally has that kind of potential. So I love hearing that the strategic hires we place continue to almost even have more value than they even considered possible when we first engaged. So those are some of the kind of experiences I've had. And it truly is one of my favorite parts of my job.
Yeah, I love watching you do it because it's like, I come in as the recruiter when we were first starting, and I you have these kind of list of questions that you've been taught or you want to ask and you want to get that information. But I like there's one time when we were doing a job brief with a client in the beginning, and they told us about a job. I think it was about an operations person. They said, no, you don't need that job. You need this job. This is what you need for your company. And I thought that was so great because you challenged them. And they say, actually, you need this type of candidate. I actually have somebody in mind that I know could be a good fit for you. And it was, trying to change the way I looked at it, and that was cool.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of extra steps when it comes to, executive searches, which many of these confidential searches are. There's extra steps in the sourcing. There's extra steps in the job intake, step. And I think that... we'll talk a little bit about those, I guess, but you have to kind of throw out the playbook a little bit for the way that you recruit juniors when you're when you start recruiting these executives and you start doing confidential executive search. People oftentimes use the word executive search as a differentiator for like temp staffing. It's like either temp staffing or executive search. I actually think there's perm staffing, there's perm placement, and then there's executive search, because the way you place a manager, even director level person, is different than the way, you know, that you go out to the market for an executive, especially in a strategic confidential role.
Yeah, it's a whole different kind of skill set that's needed in a way to do that.
Let's talk about this. Let's get into it, right? So what are some of the tips, Danny, that you would give to hiring managers out there on how to execute recruiting for confidential searches? What are some of the tips and tricks that might differentiate that executive search, that confidential executive search, from a typical search?
Yeah, the way we do best with our clients with any search is for them to give us as much information as possible. So in this case, it's confidential search. Why? We want to know, why is the search confidential? Why didn't, you know, if it's someone that you're replacing because of performance or another issue, why didn't they work out? Is it a resignation? Is it or is this a new market that you'd like to break into? We want to know as much information as possible to really understand what their goal is. And then that'll also play into the type of person that we are going to look for and present to them.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think each one of those questions that we ask, there's a reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So for instance, the question, you know, why did this person not work out? Well, there's a reason we need to know that. You know, when I ask that question, I want to know, what did the other person not have that the new person will need to have?
Yeah.
And also, by the way, I'm going to challenge you to say, if this is a process issue, or if this role is not designed to be successful, have you fixed that? Right. You know, if this role is inherently flawed, we got to talk about that too, because we don't want to hire somebody amazing into, I mean, I don't want to put my name on a job that's set up to fail. So
yeah,
if maybe there's a way that I can consult with that hiring manager, say, hey, have you thought about the additional support that this person's going to need to be successful and not run into the same issues that Susie had, you know, or whatever. So anyway, yeah, all these questions have reasons behind them.
Yeah.
But they're great questions.
Yeah. We uncover a lot of things with this. So absolutely. And then the second thing is, I would suggest putting together a clear and detailed job description.
Yes.
So you mentioned that before. It's so important. I know we drive our clients crazy sometimes because they're, you know, they're the CEO and they don't, the last thing they want to do is put together.
Like, I haven't put a job description together in 12 years. What do you mean? And then they show up on Thursday with the job description. Like, nice job. Well done.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly.
Done. I can help.
So, right. So it's so important. And you know, I think they see the value in it when they do it. Then they actually will come back to us and be like, ah, I get it now. Like, as I was like working this out in my head and putting it on paper.
Yes.
It's becoming clearer to me. So it's really an exercise for the client also, not just for us.
Yes. 100%. And then what else is important? Other tips that you would give people? Cause there's a lot of things you have to navigate when you're doing
There's
a
so
confidential
many.
Search.
What's yeah.
the other tip?
The last one I would say is coming up with best practices with your recruiter on how you're gonna approach the confidentiality in the market. There's different things you can do. You can have an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, that you can have your recruiter send off to the candidates. And
let's talk about
sign.
NDAs real quick, right? Because that makes a lot of sense. Oh, confidential, NDA, non-disclosure, makes perfect sense. But why is it a good idea, but why is it also a challenging idea?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. So the good thing is it formalizes a confidential relationship with the candidate. They understand that they're agreeing to something that isn't to be shared. And that just avoids the potential of them going out and sharing this information in the market. The negative thing is it's a roadblock. Especially when you're dealing with a senior level candidate who's not necessarily unhappy, but is intrigued by a position, and you go and ask them to fill something out. I mean, if you have to sign anything, you're hesitant in general, right? So,
yeah, I mean, signing stuff, there's a chance, there's a good chance that they won't sign it.
Yeah.
And if they don't sign it, we can't move forward. And if we can't move forward, then we can't get them to the presentation phase. And so sometimes you have to have a little bit of information to kind of pique their interest. And I think it's important during the conversation with the company to say, now, what information can I share and what can I not share? Because I need enough to paint a picture that's intriguing, but that doesn't compromise you.
Exactly. That's what we have to tell our clients, right? A lot of times they'll bring that up. It's something that you can do. And if they really want to do it, we'll go along with that process and we'll do it. But we have to advise them of what they're going to get into if they add something else into the interview process.
So you know? I'm actually a fan of not using NDAs. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you what I like to do instead. So my trick is I actually, instead of an NDA, it takes a little bit longer. Well, as an extra step, I'll say this. So instead of an NDA, what I like to do is I like to do what I call like a two-factor authentication, right?
Yeah.
So I go to the candidate and I'm like, hey, here's this really cool role. Here's a little bit about it. It's confidential. Would you be open to having a conversation? And they say, yeah, I'm open. That's interesting. Caught me at a good time. I'd be interesting depending on who it is. Then I would go back to the client and say, okay, Sharon says that she'd be interested in having a conversation. Here's her LinkedIn profile. Here's what I know about Sharon, because we're not dealing with resumes at this point. Here's what I know about her. Here's why I approached her. Here's why I think she'd be a good fit. Are you interested in having a conversation? If so, I will share your, you know, who you are, your identity, and I'll get it scheduled. And they say, yeah, you know what? This is interesting. Yeah, I'd like to talk to Sharon. Perfect. Sounds good. Hey, Sharon, good news. Talk to the client. Based on your background, they'd be interested in having a conversation. The name of the company is XYZ. Here's why I think you'd be a good fit. Are you available Tuesday or Wednesday? Right. And that's kind of how we bring it home while protecting the identities of the people kind of each step of the way.
I love that process. You advised me on this when I'm working on an executive search now, and it's been great. And you know what? I was a little bit hesitant. I'm like, how are people going to react to me going up and trying to sell them a job, but I don't tell them the name of the company or the job? But you know what? At that executive level, they have the understanding of why it's confidential. So they get it.
Yes.
You know,
those
they
people deal in confidentiality already.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, so many things that they deal with are confidential, I'm sure. So I think they respect it.
They respect it. And that's been a really kind of eye opening for me. And I think it's a great approach. And I would say that any client that we work with in this way on a confidential search, this is just a great process. And it's been a good, you know, a great experience for me.
Danny, do you have any final thoughts to leave people with?
My final thoughts are, you know, if you have a confidential search, at the very least, talk to a recruiter, you know, because you know, like we were saying, you know, you talking this stuff through and giving them ideas in an unbiased way, regardless, is going to be really valuable for you to just figure out what you need and how to approach it.
Yeah, I love it. I would agree. If you're looking at an executive search, you should be looking to partner with a recruitment firm in your specialism, in your industry. Make sure that you engage with them. Don't rely on your personal networks, because you're only going to be scratching, you know, kind of the tip of the iceberg. You really need to have a professional working on it. It'll improve the speed, the quality of the search. And I would say if you need something in the global mobility industry, definitely reach out to Danny. Definitely reach out to myself. Glomo, we're here to help. We love to consult on these things. So if we could be of assistance, please hit us up on LinkedIn. Also, follow us on Instagram, Glomo_consulting on Instagram. Also, follow us on LinkedIn, just Glomo. Hit us up, glomo.com. Can't wait to hear from all of you. Thanks so much for everybody who tuned in and listened to the Get Talent Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe so you get all of them sent to you hot and fresh in the app. So thanks, Danny. This is amazing.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Take care, everybody. See you next time.
Get Talent Podcast.